This is Meet the Movie Press. It's August 3rd. How the fuck did we get here? Star Wars Episode 1. Deplane, Blumhouse go to Fantasy Island. And Tarantino's Star Trek is 6 years away? Maybe? Plus the box office and so much more. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press.
You don't have to go wide from me. I'm wide enough.
That's... Oh, my God. I can't believe you did that. No, we don't need to go wide for you, Dimitri. By the way, welcome back.
It's great to
be back. We're so sorry. We told you Comic-Con was last weekend.
Yeah. I'm like... You know, and I thought I beat the crowds. That's how early
well,
I got
you
down
did.
There.
I
did.
I told you. I did. You know, when you got that $99 a night room, I said, something's a little weird about that.
But you know what was also great about the whole thing?
What was that?
There was no line at Richard Walker's Pancake House.
Yes.
So, only for you.
And I didn't get to go because there was a line every damn day.
Well, okay, guys, who are you and what are you doing here? Dimitri, let's start with you.
Well, yeah, thanks. I'm part of the Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie.
You are.
Which goes every Friday.
Well, what are you doing?
Thank you.
What are you covering this week, Dimitri?
This week, my gracious hosts, Phil Svitek and Marissa Serafini, we are going to talk about Mission Impossible Fallout, the best action movie of the summer. I mean, so amazing. Can't wait to talk about that. And I think we're also going to do Teen Titans Go!
Yes.
The movie.
So, which no one appears to have seen.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
A crying shame.
You know what? Not on the day that I went. And I went midweek, and my theater was filled.
Well, at least we can use our movie passes. Ooh, too soon.
Wait, what?
Hello, are you Scott? And where can we find you?
I am Scott Menzel.
Yep.
You can find me on... Oh, I get cheered too! You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at The Other Scott M. WeLiveEntertainment.com. I now do 3 shows across these networks.
What?
Yes, another 3. One!
Oh my God, do you sleep?
No, okay. Not, apparently. The LA Online Film Critics Society now has its own show.
What's it called?
It's LA Online Film Critics Society Weekly.
Fucking amazing.
Because you know what?
Perfect.
That's a nice long title.
It is.
Which is fun.
Rolls off the tongue.
LAOFCS is just as difficult.
Yeah.
So just say it all out.
Sweet.
That's nice.
And that runs at 11 o'clock today on Fridays.
If you're watching this live, otherwise that's completely irrelevant.
That's right. That's right. Right. And
just
then I do Black Tomatoes, of course, on Sundays at 5 p.m.
Yep.
And that is on Black Hollywood Live, and that's with Carla Renata. And then, of course, I do this freaking awesome show with these two guys, which is called Meet the Movie Press, just in case you didn't know.
I mean, that's lovely, but have you seen this show?
Yeah.
Anyway, we've run out of time. Unfortunately, we don't have any time this week.
Listen, my dad has become a really huge fan of you guys.
Wow.
You guys. Me?
Oh, not so much.
Not so much.
Tough crowd.
You guys, yes.
Well, who am I? My name is Simon Thompson. I'm the host of this show with my able co-pilots, obviously, who've just introduced themselves. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Showbiz Simon, and there's a Facebook page if you're old, because apparently only old people use Facebook and Russians. This is Simon Thompson. But you can find me on Instagram and Twitter, as I say, at Showbiz Simon.
But we're too old to use Snapchat.
We are. I don't do Snapchat.
I don't get it either.
No.
Yeah, but MySpace.
You don't use the gram?
No, I don't use the gram.
Someone said to me the other day, "Are you doing an Instagram story?" I was like, "No."
But MySpace still works for me really well, and has it been hacked?
I'm very popular on Vine. Very popular on Vine. Okay, guys, we've got so much stuff to get through. Just after the show, rather inconveniently, Mr. J.J. Abrams made an announcement about Star Wars 9, or Star Wars Wine, as I'm calling it, because everybody was moaning about it.
But if you keep doing that, people will continue to whine.
I'm hoping that we can actually raise money to remake this film before it's even reached cinemas this time.
Me too.
Just to try and preempt it. So, cast announcements on that. Obviously, Mark Hamill is going to come back as Luke Skywalker. He didn't die in The Last Jedi. Who saw that coming? Billy Dee Williams is returning as Lando Calrissian, and Carrie Fisher is going to be joining the cast again from footage that was previously filmed they're going to use in this film. Guys, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I hope we get another scene of space Carrie Fisher, you know,
From Superman?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm hoping for.
Space you Carrie Fisher.
Yes. Because, I mean, when she was flown out in space, I was like, whoa, this is next level shit.
Now, I enjoyed The Last Jedi. I know I'm so kind casual. Of in the minority yes, with that. Yes, but that was one thing where I was like, I don't think we needed that. But I'm very glad that she is going to be included in the new movie. It wasn't a massive surprise. I thought she would be in some form, either in flashbacks or in some other way. But I'm very happy to see her. You can't get enough Carrie Fisher.
No. And so long as they don't try to do that digital route that they did with her.
Yeah.
Rogue, whatever. I'm not a fan of Rogue One, but if it's footage that they can cleverly edit in.
Yeah.
Without heavy modifications, and that it makes sense, which it's J.J. Abrams. So in J.J. I trust that it'll be done with taste. And then she will get, you know, Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher, will get the send-off that she rightfully, respectfully deserves within the saga. You know, I know Mark Hamill has tweeted about this, and you know, he's happy. And apparently they went through the right channels to do it, too, to get this footage. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a cash-in for me, which I kind of thought, you know, a lot of people are going to accuse them of potentially doing. But Leia was such a... It's really funny. Leia was such a massive part and continues to be such a massive part of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people were kind of like, oh, potentially it's a cash grab. What are you doing? But I'm really glad they're going down this route rather than doing the CGI or finding some other way to kind of shoehorn it.
It's also very important to mention that of the original Star Wars universe, she is really the only strong female character.
Yeah.
I know that gets thrown around a lot, that term, and I'm starting to hate it, because what about just having great female characters instead of always being a strong female character?
That's what George Lucas wrote her. Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that's why they're keeping her. And they need to kind of close out this. They need to give her a great send-off, I feel, at the end of this movie, so that she can feel like she completed her contribution to this franchise.
Fair. I think that's
fair. Absolutely. And again, we're in such different times where, when you think about it, right? So George Lucas is writing this screen story in the 70s, right? There was no Me Too movement. No. And there was none. And it was just about, I needed a damsel in distress who really wasn't in distress. Like, she could handle her own.
Right.
These guys come in and they're supposed to be the heroes. And when you think about like how a little anti-Disney Star Wars is, right?
Yeah.
Usually you have the damsel in distress. They fall in love with the hero, whatever. She was telling the heroes what to do.
Leia got balls. Like,
You know, and then and that was the way it was through Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So she was, there were great roles written for women. Just ask James Cameron. He was doing it well before now, too.
But in 1977, it was a case of, it was a good character. It wasn't a case of, as you say, we do need more strong female characters. Right. But back then, Leia was a character.
A good character.
Right.
Well written, well drawn, great.
And it wasn't like, there wasn't the obligation to write a good female character.
No, absolutely.
He was just like, she's a good character. I'm going to make her a princess, but she's not going to be your typical princess.
Right, right.
And that's just the way
it was. I mean, we were talking about this briefly on this show that's going to be airing at 11 o'clock today.
Which show is that?
The LA Online Film Critics Society.
Okay.
Weekly show.
Nice.
Okay.
Is that a new show?
It is a new show.
Who hosts that?
Me.
Oh, okay, cool.
Me.
Okay, cool.
But I did, you know, we were talking about Die Hard yet.
Yeah.
And Die Hard is a film that's so diverse, and it's naturally diverse.
Oh, right.
And it's so interesting how we fail to look back on how many films in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s did that naturally.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're forgetting about that.
I mean, and again, there'll still be people that say that it wasn't enough.
Yes.
And I'm not going to argue against that.
Right.
But
the number of people who, like, the number of women who have not been nominated for the directing award at the Academy Awards. Sure, that's catastrophic.
But also on the diversity thing, I mean, I remember, back in the 1990s.
Back in the day
when this was all fields.
Yes.
There was a huge surge, and I was doing some John Woo stuff this week, and there was a huge surge in Asian representation in the movies. Yeah. Asian cinema. Yes. And whether that was, you know, sort of action movies or whether it was horror, and we've still seen, you know, a continual persistence in that. We've seen a huge rise in the amount of sort of Indian movies coming out, sort of Bollywood stuff as well. And also, I mean, a couple of years ago it hasn't persisted, but a lot of Nollywood, a lot of Nigerian cinema coming through. Mm-hmm. Not in the same way, but still becoming, you know, getting demi-mainstream in there. Right. But no, you're right. I mean, in the 1970s, we saw a lot more diversity than we, you know, we're moving back towards now.
Yeah.
Very naturalistic. Very naturalistic.
And even when you're looking at movies like the Diane Keaton's character in the Godfather series, right? Mm. And then, you know, when you do look at what James Cameron did, like, and I guess, I don't know, maybe because it's science fiction, I don't know, but Sarah Connor.
Mm.
Sarah Connor was not only running for her life, but she was fighting for it too, particularly in like Terminator 2.
Yeah.
So there were great characters. There were great characters then, and again, it wasn't thought because they were obligated to do it. It's just the way that these writers were thinking about having and putting women into these movies.
100%.
So,
and if you go back and look at a lot of cop movies, a lot of cop bosses were black.
Yeah.
Right.
There was a huge amount, because I've recently gone back and watched a lot of 1970s movies. Huge amount of high-level cops in these movies were African-American.
Yeah.
So we did see representation, but now we're kind of, you know, good, pushing towards that. But we're getting slightly off topic. Let's check in the chat, see what people are saying at the moment. It was good. It was good. It's fine. It's tangents. It's totally fine. Everybody's saying morning. Good morning. Wheel of Entertainment. Hello, everyone. Mike saying early AF. That is true. LS Gale, bad British accent. Mine's a real British accent, but thank you so much. I don't know why I did that. I just tried to do a British accent and actually fucked it up, even though I am British. That's quite spectacular. Straight Edge Vegan Bell saying loved Fallout.
How's it going?
Absolutely. Good to have you back in the chat, which is great. John Harrison saying, Scott, intelligent. So glad that you're doing more, which is good. I think basically John says, glad you're getting out of the house.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So some wonderful feedback in there. John Harrison saying, I'm glad Hamill is back. He got shortchanged a bit by killing him off in 8. I think that's absolutely fair. Mm-hmm. I had absolutely zero doubt that he was going to return in form in the future. John Harrison again saying, there's been a bit of a female empowerment moment in the 1970s, though. Exactly what we were just saying. Charlie's Angels, ABBA, Wonder Woman. You don't hear those three things together very often. Although, actually, Mamma Mia, Wonder Woman 1992, I think, is coming soon. Sky Patterson saying, if Disney Lucasfilm is using lost footage of Carrie Fisher in Star Wars Episode 9, it better serve some other purpose with a hopefully epic, complex, cohesive character-driven space opera. I think that's exactly what is going to happen. John, referencing what we were talking about Asian cinema in the 1990s, Tomorrow Never Dies, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, John Woo, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, absolutely all 90s. And also making a comment that even in the first Alien from 79, Ripley was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen that representation there.
James Cameron.
Very briefly, aliens, going back to Star Wars, another casting thing that has been, we discussed on the show previously, Kerry Russell.
Sure.
Yes.
Joining, obviously she wasn't part of the main announcement, then that was amended. Kerry Russell going to be joining the movie as well, and filming started on Episode 9 in London this week, which is great. Okay, time to visit Blumhouse Corner. Blumhouse making Fantasy Island, which I'm pretty psyched about. I love it. It wasn't a huge TV show in the UK where I grew up, but I did love the show. The plane.
You had Knick-Knack. That's who he was in A Man with a Golden Gun.
Yes.
Hervé Villechaize.
Yeah.
It was a huge...
Sadly dead.
Sadly. By his own rope.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. But it was good Saturday night TV.
Great TV.
It was The Love Boat. I think it was like an Aaron Spelling 2 hours. Mm. It was Love Boat, and then it was Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ricardo Montalban.
Yes.
Who, you know, conned to everybody, but he was also, you know, a Cordoba car with fine, rich Corinthian leather. You know, I mean, you had this great show that was sort of Twilight Zone-ish in a sense, where everybody went off on their own, let's call it adventure, that they paid for, and then they came back with a self-realization and learning something about themselves. It was a really ahead of its time kind of a show.
Mm.
And I think to make it a movie is a really solid idea. And if anybody's going to pay attention and do it right, would be Blumhouse.
Which I'm very interested to see how they do it, because there's a lot of... One thing that was very popular a number of decades ago, and we kind of lost this, was... I mean, apart from things like the VHS series, if you haven't seen them, by the way, very good horror movies. Anthology storytelling in movies. We saw a spate of that with movies like The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Dark Side. We've seen it again, a resurgence with things like VHS. I know there's a movie that Mick Garris and Joe Dante have done, which is coming out very soon, which is, again, anthology storytelling. I think there's room for this. It's something that we don't currently have on the big screen, which could be quite interesting. I just want them to make it as dark as fuck.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if it's going to go campy or if it's going to go dark.
I would like it to go dark.
Me
with
too.
Blumhouse, I think
Me
you
too.
Can kind of mix the two.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you don't have to go dark as fuck, but you can have that there. You don't need to go campy. Is the way that
darkest
they should
fondle.
Go.
So
fair enough.
Yeah, darkest
so
over the brazier.
You do that way too. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, but. What I'm getting at is the show itself is something that we don't necessarily have, especially in a 1 hour, is that there were one-offs. It wasn't like serialized, okay? And it doesn't come off when you watch it as an anthology show. Mm. It was like, and I don't know how they're going to do it.
It was episodic and self-contained.
Episodic, self-contained, and you had at least... two visitors coming to the island that they were going to focus on, and their stories sort of paralleled, like they would go back and forth, and then by the end of the show, everything wrapped up. So I don't know if they're going to do, you know, a couple comes to Fantasy Island to have their fantasy come true.
Yeah,
will they do multiple guests coming to the island to do it, or will they do it more anthology?
Well, what
style?
I'm wondering is maybe they will follow kind of the pattern of things like the Saw franchise, where they are self-contained individual stories with people and consequences and issues and development, and yet within this universe there's Fantasy Island, blah blah blah, Fantasy Island Retribution, where they are somehow intrinsically linked in a larger Fantasy Island universe. Because Blumhouse currently, they're doing phenomenally well, but outside of something like The Purge, they don't have a franchise. Whereas if you look at the likes of Warner Brothers, they're building universes around things like The Conjuring, obviously The Nun, Annabelle, that kind of thing. So this would be something for them to start as an additional franchise to The Purge, where things are, they're a continuing story, they're somehow intrinsically linked. Do you think that's a path they could potentially take with this?
It's possible.
It is.
It is really possible.
But I would just stick to let's do it.
They have to. Here's the thing. They have to build a foundation first.
Yes.
Because again, when you're doing something like this, the audience that is going to see this movie is probably not that familiar with the original.
Very good point.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they may. Okay. One of the charms of the original show is Rourke. Ricardo Montalban's character was more or less like a god. Like you never got to see the man behind the curtain and how all this stuff was coming to light. Mm. Like it was in a sense almost like Westworld, except you didn't realize you're in Westworld. Like you didn't, like you're paying for this fantasy, but you didn't know how it was so mapped out.
Yeah.
And the resolutions were Rourke pretty much was the god. So I would figure in the movie there may be some explanation, or maybe they'll just keep it that way as they did in the television series.
And I just think it's a real toss-up, too, because like with a show like that, you know, when a show like this that obviously has a cult following that's for a very specific audience, we've seen even major TV shows be turned into movies that have not done well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
very true.
The only good
it's difficult to do.
The saving grace with this is that Blumhouse is doing it because you know the budget is going to be in check.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't gross a ton of money, it'll probably still make its budget back.
That is true.
They'll have a good cast.
That's right.
They'll have good casting, and they'll have good marketing.
It's also a potential for, I mean, I don't know if this is their grand scheme, but they've done it with The Purge, to go back to that, is to then have movies, but then also have spin-offs as a TV show. So potentially they could use this as a launch pad for either sort of complementary TV series, or to start it as a big screen thing and then throw it to the small screen. That
this seems like actually a good fit for a Netflix series, actually.
Yeah. And we don't know if this is going to be a theatrical release or if it's going to be something that is going to be streaming. Yeah. But we just know that it's going to be a film.
Okay. Yeah. I can see this really doing well on Netflix. As a discovery, you know, someone saying, what is this? And then they click on it and then it either like works and everyone's talking about it or it doesn't work and it just dies.
I can see the potential as a movie. Really can.
I agree.
I think that it could work because thematically, I think it's right there. And I think it hits genre fans, nostalgia fans, it runs that board really well. And I think done right, like they usually do, I think it could do very well. Yeah.
In the chat, Sky Patterson saying, good to have you on the show again, Sky. Blumhouse doing a new adaptation of Fantasy Island. Cool. Go forward. Would like to see James Wan, Jennifer Kent, or Karen Kusama doing stuff. Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Really good idea. John Harrison backing Sky up there saying Karen is a cool choice. The Invitation was a great little indie thriller. Absolutely. And again, that's the kind of thing that would actually work as if you were doing it, condensing it as an episodic thing on Fantasy Island, would be really, really good. Again, Sky saying Fantasy Island, starting a franchise. No. Interesting. Make a dramatic psychological horror thriller set in the 90s Caribbean. Evil Dead meets Castaway. Hashtag Blumhouse.
Mm.
That's actually a really good take as well. I agree on that. And John saying Gem and the Holograms comes to mind with Blumhouse. Lol.
Yes.
It's funny. I mean, people don't often say Gem and the Holograms comes to mind.
Right. No one
generally,
does.
Generally, including the cast of Gem and the Holograms.
Yeah.
John
M. Chu is definitely so I think we found the person. On the press tour for Crazy Rich Asians.
But the good thing is, actually, I think we just found the person who did see Gem and the Holograms. So, John.
Kudos.
I'm sure they appreciate the money, which is good.
They did. Absolutely.
So are you doing stuff for Crazy Rich Asians?
Yes.
Cool.
This week.
Are you doing?
Crasians.
I am not doing.
Crasians. Okay.
Crasians.
Screening is tomorrow. Tonight. It's Friday. Yep. Tonight. 6:30 tonight.
It is. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not. I was going to be working that, but then
I'm also seeing the doggy movie, which I'm actually really excited for because I love dogs.
Axel?
Dog Days? No, not Axel. What the?
I'm seeing Alpha in a couple of weeks. We're getting again off topic,
it's okay.
Movies we're seeing.
I'm just going to the movies.
This is the movies we're seeing portion of.
Seriously, the insight into our lives is absolutely fascinating. I'll also be doing laundry this weekend, and I might have a poop. I'm not doing Crazy Rich Asians this weekend, although I am very intrigued to see it. Yeah. I am seeing The Meg. Tomorrow night.
I'm sorry.
Tomorrow night at the Egyptian Theatre.
I thought you were going to say
They're doing a triple bill of The Meg in 3D, followed by Jaws 3D, followed by Deep Blue Sea.
In 3D?
No.
Wait, so you're seeing... So I didn't even know The Meg was coming out in 3D, so... So you're seeing The Meg in 3D?
Then
you get to see Jaws 3D?
Yeah.
That's the one with Dennis Quaid.
Yes. That is.
That's the one with Leah Thompson.
Filmed in SeaWorld in Orlando.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler. Good luck.
Well, there's a reason why they're showing that, so it can elevate the other movie that's coming out next week.
Oh.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The Smeg.
I'm throwing a little shade. I'm sorry.
Okay. We can talk about that on the show next week.
I don't know if I can say at
the Popcorn Talk Network.
Not as good as Jaws 3 is, it definitely wasn't Jaws the Revenge.
That's
damning with faint praise. Not as good as Jaws 3D. Jaws the Revenge. I like it.
Fair enough.
Do you? But you'll probably like The Meg.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Has this also bought Michael Caine a house in the Caribbean?
No.
No.
It's also going to be like when you hear the story of like $150 million disaster.
Although I am looking forward. I'm working the premiere on Monday night here in L.A. I'm just very happy. I'm purely working it because I want to be reunited with my hairless bro, Jason Statham.
Awesome.
Yeah. Who, by the way, if you don't know this, there's a couple of pop videos that he did, in the 1990s. There's one by The Shaman. Where he is a dancer in like Speedos, and also Erasure's Run to the Sun. So if you check those on YouTube, Jason Statham was in basically a pair of Speedos covered in gold in Run to the Sun, posing on a big spinning globe.
God bless him.
I shall be asking him about that. And really important news items on the red carpet at Meg
and
on Monday night.
And ask him if he's still, you know, because it's funny. Ghost of Mars, John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars.
I love that movie. It's so bad, but it's so fucking good.
And he's in it.
Oh my god!
He's in that movie.
That's great.
Of course he is.
Of course,
Jason Statham has done some.
The man who's like a king of VOD and Redbox titles,
along with Ice Cube.
Oh, Ice Cube!
Ice Cube, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. God, I love Ghost of Mars.
They should do a shark movie together. That was. You know what? That was a miscast issue in the Meg. They should have put Ice Cube in it. Yep, he should have been the token black guy in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Who did they have in it?
I have no idea, but he was annoying as fuck.
Wow.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
How's Lai Bing Bing? Is she good?
No. No. She's not big.
Awkward.
There's not. You are not going to get me to say much positive thing.
Okay, I know a lot of people have enjoyed that movie, which is totally fine.
Which is weird because.
Which movie?
The Meg.
The Meg.
I just feel like it's so weird that people are saying, like, Jaws meets Jurassic Park. I'm like, what movie are we watching? Like, yeah. I'm very
confused.
They're
taking quotes from the book. I mean, because when the book came out, because it is based off a book, which very few people
Three
seem
of them,
to
right?
know. There could be four.
Four,
actually.
Okay.
Steve Alton.
There's the Meg.
Called Meg.
And the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
There's the Meg and the Furious.
You got them all right. Yeah.
And there's the Meg.
Cranked up Meg.
Cranked.
Mega.
Yeah. Meg Harder.
There's the Mega.
Meg 4.0. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great books.
Meg a Bite.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Where in the world is the Meg?
Yeah.
That's great. Teenage Mutant Ninja Megs.
Yeah.
Batman versus Meg.
Meg,
yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so let's move on from the very randomness of the Meg.
Meg Ryan.
People like that is true. Who looks. Meg Ryan, as much as I love her, if there was a Meg Ryan lookalike contest, Meg Ryan would currently come last.
Wow!
Seriously. It's just, I love Meg Ryan.
I do too, but you went there.
Come on.
Wow.
Come on, man.
She's
one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood.
I mean, when you look at movies like Inner Space,
It's
like you want stunning.
It's like, yeah. Stunning.
Top Gun. We'll get to Top Gun 2 later
on.
That's
right.
Let's look at the chat. Okay, John Harrison saying Alpha has some really moving trailers. Studio 8 hasn't made a movie since Billy Lynn's Half-Time Walk. That is true, and there's probably a good reason why.
Yeah.
Sky Patterson saying, I love Deep Blue Sea, one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies. Sky, there is nothing guilty pleasure about Deep Blue Sea. That is a great, great fun movie.
Yes.
That is a great popcorn movie. Never be ashamed of liking that movie. John Harrison saying. Jason Statham is winning because he's holding down Rosie Huntington Whiteley. I salute him. She has a thing for ball guys.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. John Harrison, Live Free or Meg Hard. Do you know what? I would watch that. Mike Marchant, Meg Tokyo Drift. I would also watch that.
You got Meg.
Yeah. So let's move on. You've got Meg.
Yep.
You've got Meg.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on to Simon Pegg offering a Star Trek 4 update this week. Obviously, been doing the rounds for Mission Impossible Fallout. Says Tarantino's Trek is likely 6 years away.
Hope I'm alive.
I mean, there's still talk of this movie, and I know we've discussed it on the show previously. Do you think this will happen? I hope it does, but I don't know. But people still seem to be talking about it as a thing that is actually a thing.
It's literally Paramount, as a Star Trek fan.
Yeah,
I say this with great respect.
Live long and prosper.
They've just fucked up Star Trek at this point, really terribly. And that was after the two J.J. Abrams movies, Star Trek Into Darkness, and then they had the 50th anniversary, which was the Star Trek Beyond, which they just totally messed up as both a movie and as from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
All you had to do is take a page from Skyfall, when like everybody knew that James Bond was 50.
Yeah.
Nobody knew that Star Trek was 50 years old as a franchise.
Doesn't look a day over 40, though.
You know, and they took their time to over-market Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
When you have a franchise that you're working here. And for 6 years now, I've heard Tarantino, that there's going to be a Tarantino movie, and there's going to be one, like, from the JJ universe.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And some people are saying yes, but they're already saying this will probably, like Zachary Quinto has already put it out there that this will most likely be his last turn as Spock, which would stink. So I just don't know what Paramount's doing. And then with this whole Discovery by putting Star Trek on a pay subscribership, when Star Trek, the name alone screams, like, you have Supergirl over Star Trek? Like, you have CW you could have put this on.
But also, with the show that they had with Discovery, it appears to have found its feet again as a franchise. So,
has it, though?
It seems to have a strong following again.
Where? On Twitter, yes. Mm. But I don't know who's watching it. I don't have conversations with other Star Trek fans who are watching Discovery because nobody wants... I don't want to... Well, personally, it's an insult. I don't want to pay for another subscription service. Mm. Look, if you were to have put it on Netflix, that's... Okay, I'd be like, all right, billions of people have Netflix all over the world. And from what I understand, if you're in Canada, and even if you're overseas, that's how you watch Star Trek Discovery, is on Netflix.
Interesting.
Here in the States, you have to pay for CBS All Access to do it. I don't even think they've put the first season out on Blu-ray.
No,
so
not as far as I'm aware.
I don't even know. Like, I can't even watch it as a Star Trek fan, but I'm not paying. Like, it's if that's your anchor to get me to pay for CBS All Access, as opposed to, like, the Disney streaming, which will have more than just Star Wars. It'll have Disney, like,
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
They need to pay the franchise more TLC and respect.
Yeah.
Because of what it is. I know they're waiting for this whole Viacom merger to happen, too, because J.J. Abrams has complained. He complained a lot during Into Darkness, saying, I can't get toys out because of this stupid merger.
Yeah.
So how do you market it? It's a mess, I think.
I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I still think the biggest issue, is going to be the budget.
Yeah.
Because since it's such a high-tech show, and the fact that Quentin Tarantino makes mid-level films, you know, he's an independent director, he makes mid-level films, to kind of have him do this, and I know this is kind of hypocritical saying this because there's so many independent directors who've made big-budget franchises.
Sure.
But he's known for being bloody. He's known for going balls out, for being, you know, cursing like crazy. And it's a weird switch of tone for people who grew up watching Star Trek. Now, if they reboot the franchise again or do another generation or whatever it is, it may work. But then they're going to have him signed on for like 3 films.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least like to kind of move the story forward. Mm. They're going to have to do it. And to find someone who can match Quentin Tarantino's tone, that's going to be difficult. Because... I will say about him, he has a very unique tone to him that I don't feel like any other filmmaker quite has, which is what makes his films so special, is that when you watch a Quentin Tarantino film, you know
it's watching... It's a Quentin Tarantino movie,
It doesn't feel like, oh, this is sort of
it's like... It's like a stick of rock. Right. It's all the way through.
You know, like, there's a lot of movies that come out where you say, like, this kind of feels like a Steven Spielberg movie. Like, First Man kind of looks like Damien Chazelle's version of a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
There's movies that, like... You see, like, what's the movie? There was a recent... Oh, Lemony Snicket's?
Yeah.
Felt like a Tim Burton movie.
I was going to say Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Wow. Yes, that felt like an Adam Sandler movie without Adam Sandler, but wait a minute, that was produced by Happy Madison.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you watch that awesome movie on Netflix that David Spade's in?
That's a thing you don't hear very often. Did you watch that awesome movie on Netflix? No, I didn't know. And also, with David Spade
terrible.
In it.
It's
no.
terrible.
Even
it's
David terrible. Spade I doesn't know. Did you watch that awesome movie with David Spade in it?
He did. But
every David Spade movie now comes with an apology at the beginning.
Yes. I'm sorry I did this.
I love David Spade, but dude.
Remember Child's? What was the one Child stars on the television? I love that one.
Was it Corky?
No, it's not Corky Romano. That's
Corky Romano. That was,
the little guy.
Chris Kattan.
Yeah. Chris Kattan.
Dickie Roberts.
Dickie Roberts. Child star.
Yeah, that was so fun.
They didn't make a sequel to that.
Futs.
Yeah. What?
This is Knucking Futs.
Knucking Futs. That's right. Yep. That was a great movie. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know.
Star Trek, Tarantino, David Spade.
Yeah.
Wow, that is some...
Maybe Tarantino could cast David Spade.
Where you know that we're real hardcore movie nerds.
But your concerns
here
about Quentin Tarantino are my curiosities, because I do like it when a director in your... you're right. He has a tone that is almost anti-Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
But I like it when a director goes out of perhaps his safe zone, right?
Yeah.
And he could... Like, Star Trek doesn't need to be bloody. It doesn't need to be profane. And Quentin Tarantino has said he is a science fiction fan and a fan of Star Trek.
It's a genre he hasn't touched at this
correct.
Point.
Correct. No. And I think that, to me, says... Okay, it gives me pause, and I said, I'm curious to know.
I would like to see him do effectively like a Starship Troopers kind of thing. It can be a standalone project, and it can be backstory, it can be whatever. It doesn't have to be canon, but it's kind of like Cliff Notes.
I have a better question. Is Star Trek the franchise for him to experiment with? It's not as profitable. Like, it's not...
But it can be, and people say it's not as profitable.
Yeah, but it's not as profitable because the budgets of those movies are high.
Yes.
If you did get Tarantino to do it and you gave him $25 million to spunk up the wall, then you can make a profitable Star Trek movie.
I don't know. Right. I think the last three Star Trek movies did fairly well.
They did okay.
I mean, even after publicity.
But you can't compare them to Star Wars.
But if he is going to do it with the sci-fi...
anything to Star
no,
Wars.
No, but if he is going to do it with the sci-fi franchise, then Star Trek is the one that he is most likely to do it with. Unless you get him to do something like a remake of a Soylent Green or that kind of thing, or a Logan's Run, where you can really sort of fuck shit up. Right. I think really Star Trek is the sci-fi franchise that he can... That is an existing IP that I think he can do that with.
I agree, too.
Worldwide, it made $343 million.
That was beyond.
Yeah, beyond. Which the production budget was $185 million, which in the States, it didn't even make $185 million.
Yeah.
So, if you give him $25 or $50 million,
which Tarantino can completely nail, then you are instantly, even if it makes $185 million, you're still profitable.
I think you're bringing up a very good point. It was kind of like...
Oh, hang on. Get that on tape.
Very good point.
This doesn't happen very often. Hang on, we are on tape.
There's an issue with budgeting in Hollywood.
Hugely.
I love Power Rangers. I will go on record and say this. When they made that new movie and I saw the budget was like $100 million, I said, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
Because at about $40 million, maybe $50 million max, that would have came out and been like, this is a hit. Mm-hmm. But at $100 million, like, look at the original movie. Even back in the day, that's the heyday of Power Rangers when everyone was talking about it.
Yeah. Right.
That didn't even make that much money. Mm. So why you would think that you can revamp something and double the budget of an original movie is just silly to me. And they're like, oh, it underperformed. It didn't underperform. It did well. You just didn't know how to budget the movie.
Right. True. In the chat, John Harrison saying Dickie Roberts is underappreciated.
Yes.
So it's good to have David Spade in the chat today, claiming to be John Harrison. I feel that movie is...
Me too.
So John there's Harrison, two people. The name of,
three people, David Spade as well.
I could all swear John Harrison's the name of the character that Benedict Cumberbatch played in Into Darkness. It was John Harrison, a.k.a. Khan.
Well, who knew that that Benedict Cumberbatch was a big fan of the work of David Spade?
Who knew?
Things you learn on the Meet the Movie Press every week here on the Popcorn Talk Network. John Harrison again saying, I feel that movie is more relevant now with YouTube stars and Disney Channel stars going off the rails.
Yes.
Absolutely agree. Sky Patterson saying, Star Trek movie idea, Zero Dark Thirty meets Forbidden Planet, set on planet Earth in the year 2100. Let Aaron Sorkin and Joel Edgerton team up on directing.
Interesting.
That's interesting. That is a good point, actually.
Mm-hmm.
John Harrison, the reason I said Robert Rodriguez is because he works well with Tarantino, indeed. He keeps movie budgets low, indeed, and working with Alita, he'll know more about big budget sci-fi with James Cameron. Really valid points there, actually. Sky Patterson responding, I think the budget for blockbuster films should be about 90 to 190 million, not 250 million to 450 million budget. I think that's absolutely viable. Okay, a lot of stuff to get through. So we're just going to rattle through a few stories now.
Sure.
Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and the writers of Deadpool are going to adapt the McDonald's Monopoly fraud story that you might have seen going viral this week. Actually written by a friend of mine, James Mache.
Nice.
Which is great. So very proud of him this week. Had a busy week, James, which is good. Doing some work for once, which is lovely. Yeah. Well done. Seriously, James has done phenomenally well with this. I mean, that article came out, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and Hollywood went absolutely mental for the story. Looks like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are gonna get on board with this, which is good. They're having discussions at the moment. Did you read this story?
I have not, actually.
It's seriously good. It's about basically a con behind the Monopoly game.
Yeah.
You know, you could get the Monopoly sort of game on the McDonald's boxes, and it's basically this huge scam behind it. It's kind of like Ocean's 8 with fries. Yeah. It's seriously, it's a fascinating
and
story.
It'll be better than Ocean's 8. Really, I can say that now.
Oh my God. It would have to be.
Yeah.
It would have to be.
But it's great. I mean, seriously, if you haven't read this story this week, do Google Monopoly fraud story. It's a fascinating piece. It was originally on the Daily Beast.
Yeah.
Which was a great scoop for them.
I stopped playing that dopey Monopoly game because, you know, the most I won was
a free Big Mac.
Lucky you.
Oh.
I got small fry.
Oh, okay.
On your next order. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Big Mac. People, look at you, Mr. Big Mac. Free Big Mac here. I got fries.
John Harrison saying, a movie about the McDonald's Monopoly prizes. It's not about the prizes. Seriously, it's not about...
Oh, my God, I got nuggets.
It's not.
Today, although, my Happy Meal.
Although Kevin James's
coloring book,
Kevin James's I Got Nuggets, is coming soon to Netflix, starring David Spade. Seriously, it is an article worth checking out. Go to the Daily Beast and check this out. It was a Twitter moment. It was really big this week. Do check that out. And I think Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they can work on this together, and I think it would be really, really good. They haven't worked on a lot of stuff recently together, and I think this could be something that really, really has interesting. I'd love to see what they're going to do
with casting on that. The Founder is criminally underrated, John Harrison.
The Founder was a movie that people didn't see. It was fucking brilliant.
Because you know why? Because the person in power right now. That's why. It came at a bad time.
I feel like
nobody wanted that negativity when they were in their movies.
Very interesting. They were actually filming The Founder on the day, because I know Laura Dern, and we had a conversation. We talked about that movie so much together over the last couple of years. The day that they were filming that, they started filming, was the day that Donald Trump actually came down the escalator and announced his presidency.
I'm telling you, it was cursed on the presidency.
So it was really interesting.
Yeah.
It's seriously interesting watching that movie and knowing the timeline for politics that we've seen, and kind of, you know, the whole business ethos. It's a really interesting sort of, complimentary piece. Easy for me to say.
And it will easy for you. Easy for us to listen.
Yeah.
The Founder, too, like, it's such great performances all
great
around.
Great performances,
right?
Great script as well.
Very great script. And literally, you'll at least take 2 to 3 weeks off of eating McDonald's because you'll be sort of kind of pissed.
Interesting,
and then
after
a while, you go, I need a small fry.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, look, I want a small fry.
Oh, which is actually my nickname, Small Fry. Also, Short Rounds.
That's what we call a bookend.
And Sugar Tits.
But
no, interesting. The whole idea behind The Founder about the guy taking the McDonald's
Croc
model and, Croc. Actually, at the same time, they did exactly the same thing for Taco Bell. Was founded on exactly the same principle, where they took the system from the McDonald's thing, and they basically put that into a fast food restaurant, but for Mexican food. A lot of people don't know that. It's very interesting. No, it's really good. Yeah. So there you go. Something to grow on. So let's talk about the Joker movie, or that Joker movie that appears to be called like a fucking Nickelodeon show for some reason.
That,
oh my God,
Joker!
That Joker movie! Mark Maron has joined the cast, obviously very popular as a satirist and also as a podcaster and an actor. And to be honest with you, just all-around fucking amazing human being. Really interesting to see. I don't know what his role's going to be, but if he joins the cast, that's great. That movie, considering about 6 months ago, people were saying this is never going to happen. That cast is shaping up to be one of my favorite casts of any movie in like the last 3 to 5 years.
More so than
it's
the other
seriously
Joker movie
good
they were talking about.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Oh, Jared Leto.
Yeah. That cast.
Shh. Might not be happening.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
Oh.
What happened?
It's a little difficult to deal with, you know, that guy?
What?
A little too meta for us.
Yeah.
Too busy being a vampire from Marvel.
That is true. Yeah.
I don't come out in the day.
No, he's playing Morbius for the Morbius.
Yeah. He is playing Morbius. That cast is shaping up really, really nicely. Guys, when you heard that this week, did you have any reaction to it? Did you? No.
No, it was legit. Like, I was kind of like, this is weird casting, right?
Like, like Mark Maron?
That's my reaction too.
We've got about 10 minutes left on the show, 10 or 15 minutes, so I just want to rattle through a few things before we get to box office, and we'll talk about the Venom trailer that came out this week very quickly. It won't take long. Guardians of the Galaxy cast this week posted an open letter supporting the reinstatement of James Gunn. Great to see them getting behind. A lot of people saying we don't support the jokes, but we like James. Apparently, he had discussions with Disney this week. Looks like he won't be coming back to the Guardians franchise, which, to be honest with you, I'm not entirely surprised by. I would have been very surprised if they had brought him back on board. But nice to see the cast standing behind him. Did you see the story this week?
Yes. I mean, this has been... How could you not have seen this story this
everywhere.
Week? This story has been, since Comic-Con?
Yeah, it broke right around
I feel
Comic-Con.
Like it took over, after the WB panel that day, on that Saturday, it's like the rest of the day was all about James Gunn the entire day. And then it just hasn't stopped for, the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No.
You know, it's... He apologized. This is the strangest thing for me, because he apologized for this. This happened in the past. Mm. Someone actually
apologized a number of years ago.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's what I mean. And someone must have had something so out for him.
Mm. It was really
a personal attack.
It was a... They found out who it was. I forget the person's name, but he writes for a very Republican, very conservative...
Yes, I heard about this.
And
Mike
Gunn,
Cervovich.
Yeah. I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I believe it's Mike Cervovich.
Yeah.
Okay. And James Gunn, recently, within the past month, has become, in his tweets, extremely critical of current politics. And this guy... this writer found these tweets, and he did. It was a personal attack. He even said he was going to go after the likes of Patton Oswalt, and he had other people lined up in his sights, but it was a personal attack. What's sad about it is it worked. It's affected his livelihood. He apologized for it then.
He was supposed to come to Comic-Con, by the way.
He was.
To your point, I'm not surprised, that Disney, it's unlikely. Because what's Disney going to do? Because they've already set that edict. Maybe they'll be a little wiser moving forward, right? Mm. But since they already did that, and then they had just a few weeks prior the Roseanne.
But
what's going on here is that... People are conflating these two, where this happened a decade ago. Roseanne happened a decade ago. It happened 5 years ago. It happened a month ago. Mm. It's still happening today. So they knew what they were getting into with Roseanne, but if they hire James Gunn back, I can see...
It's hypocritical, right?
Yeah. It would be hypocritical.
I'm not entirely... I'm not going to even say that it's hypocritical. It's hyper-political, because if you go and hire him back, then you're going to have a whole faction going, what about Roseanne? What about this? What about the whataboutism will be, nobody will want to listen. And there is a difference,
and I've seen a lot of people talking online and saying the jokes that he made were off-color, and they were off-color.
Yeah.
However, I saw people conflating it and saying, if you're making jokes about this kind of thing, pedophilia... then he might be an abuser. And I'm like, you can't conflate the two things. It's like saying if you watch House, it means you're potentially a doctor. Not the same thing,
Or ER.
Yeah,
I am a doctor.
But I am.
That is true.
I am.
But, this Moore guy that, was being supported, who there is fact about...
Yep.
Hitting on young people, let's say. Yeah, we're living in dangerous, interesting times. I understand why James Gunn could not be rehired. What may happen is, either he could be a ghost writer, a ghost consultant, or something. I have a feeling that he's not necessarily through with Guardians of the Galaxy.
He'll be back. I mean, Hollywood will move forward, and he will be directing films at some point in the near future. I have zero doubts.
He may not be directing Guardians 3.
Yeah. He'll have a finger in the pie.
His spirit will be
yes.
in one way, shape, or form.
Let's run through a couple of other things before we get to box office. Top Gun 2 added Glenn Powell. We discussed this a couple of weeks ago. I thought he was going to get the role over Miles Teller, and I said, I'm going to eat my hat. I still have my hat. The other one was very tasty. I did say that. I was horribly wrong, but that's fine. I don't mind being wrong. But actually, apparently Glenn Powell impressed Tom Cruise so much that they were like, fuck it, let's give you a role. So they're giving Glenn Powell a role, which is amazing.
Yeah, I hear his
maybe
his
he's moniker, Goose's other son or nephew.
No, I think his call name is Dead Meat.
Yeah. Oh, well, no spoilers there in the name.
No.
I'm very glad. I like Glenn Powell. I think he's really, really good. I think he's kind of the closest thing we have at the moment to a potential matinee idol. In movies, he's good looking. He's very accessible. I think he's very pleasant. He's charismatic. He fills the roles that he plays on screen, and I know he's got a lot of kudos for the movie that he's done on Netflix. I think Glenn Powell is going to be very, very big. I think he's a great actor.
He's definitely poised for that.
And
I'm going to talk about this more on Anatomy of a Movie when we break down Mission Impossible. But Tom Cruise today. You know, he has his muses as far as the directors that he works really well with. Kaczynski being one of them. He worked with him on Oblivion. So obviously, he wanted to go back to working together with him. I think the casting so far, we're going to get a little bit of the old with some fresh new faces, which I think is great. I can't wait. Yeah. I am looking forward to Maverick.
The more and more we talk about it every week, like... The less and less I care about Star Wars, the more and more I care about Top Gun. As weird as that sounds.
I started off very much being like, we don't need Top Gun 2, but I'm certainly warming to it. The casting is very good.
But like Star Wars, I'm like, can we just shut up about this already? Let's go for a while.
We have comments in the chat on this. Jack Dennis saying, hey guys, good morning. I guess I'm happy for Glenn Powell. Jack Dennis, as we know, is Miles Teller.
That's right.
So Miles, very, very pleased you're going to be working with Glenn, which is great. Sky Patterson, congrats to Glenn Powell on joining Top Gun Maverick. I know Glenn is a big fan of the show, so he will appreciate
that.
Popcorn Talk saying I love him too, and I want him to keep making original films such as X and Annihilation. Absolutely. John Harrison, I still think that he's British for some reason. Interesting. Jack Dennis, I see it now. Glenn Powell would play the MCU's Johnny Storm in a Fantastic Four reboot.
No. Yes.
Yeah, he'd be
not a shit idea.
I like that.
Had not considered that. Which is great. That's fantastic. Okay, a couple of other things to run through very quickly. Mowgli leaving Warner for Netflix. Netflix also buying Andy Serkis's Animal Farm motion capture adaptation.
Poor Andy Serkis.
I kind of am not surprised, though, because I did think that it was going to be... That film has been delayed quite a while. I know Andy personally has been taking a lot of care over that movie. It's been in the pipeline for a long time. It was moved because of the Jungle Book from Disney. I am not surprised that it's going to Netflix. I think it was part of a big buy-in deal that he may have done with Netflix by the fact they're buying into a lot of this content that's coming out of the Imaginarium, his studio in London.
Yeah, and so he was at CinemaCon. He, you know, and to his credit, he did, you know, you can tell without seeing the movie, he did what he believes, and this is great, he did his best.
Yeah.
Okay. And he came out at CinemaCon with cast. They were all very supportive of him, of the movie, but there was just literally no buzz.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the thing.
It was DOA.
Yeah.
And, you know, Netflix now is the new dumping grounds. Instead of, well...
It's a way for a
studio, instead of releasing a movie
Cloverfield in August, sucks, put it on Netflix.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what it is. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Because instead of getting that movie in September after Labor Day, or the middle of January into the beginning of February, right? Instead of a studio having to put out publicity money, distribution money, any kind of marketing, posters, standees, whatever it is they're going to do, they negate that, right?
Yeah.
So they get that out of the budget, they get money up front,
yep.
and it ends up being seen on Netflix, and then people can make their own decision, yay or nay, right?
Absolutely.
So Andy Serkis, as you said, now that he's Animal Farm, he's got this other deal going on. I feel bad for Andy Serkis because I think he was put in a lose-lose situation. And I, for the life of me, I still blame Warner Brothers execs who, like, you knew Disney was coming out with The Jungle Book. You knew that Jon Favreau was directing.
Yeah.
What the hell were you thinking to try to come up with yet another Jungle Book live action story?
Yeah.
I don't care how you market it. It's like when you do Jurassic Park and then Roger Corman comes out with his T-Rex.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... You should have axed the idea and given Andy Serkis something else to direct.
Agreed. On the chat in this, John Harrison saying Mowgli had no chance once The Jungle Book made merely $1 billion. Agree. It was too similar and iconic to be released too soon to it. True. Xeno Hour saying Animal Farm by Andy Serkis is something I didn't know I needed until now. Absolutely agree. Animal Farm is one of my favorite animated movies of all time. I just recently bought it on Blu-ray again. Just absolutely stunning. Jack Dennis saying...
It's also a really good book.
Oh, God. It was a book? It was a book?
Like Meg.
Yeah. What? What?
Whatever you say, you nerd.
Jack Dennis saying Mowgli was a mirror to Kristen Stewart Snow White. Absolutely agree. John Harrison, it's better that it's on Netflix because it was going to flop hard. I don't think it would flop. I just don't think it would do particularly well. And my concern with that was the fact that Warner Brothers might have buried it in some way, kind of shoved it in a
thing. And I'm just kind of... You're right. They would have done that dump. I think it was lose-lose for Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
So this way, this way, if it's on Netflix, and let's just say for the sake of this conversation with everybody, let's say it really isn't that good of a movie, right?
Yeah.
You'll only be talking about it as not being a good movie like, say, Bright or that Cloverfield movie on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
You'll only be talking about it as a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
And you'll go, well, it's a Netflix movie, right? To me, this is like the fine distinction of what should be on the big screen, and you know, if it's a Netflix.
But here's the thing, Netflix. You know, we've set it up, which I know we bring up a lot. Like, they got some positive buzz. I mean, I feel like that was the one movie that they put out that people were constantly talking about. Set it up, one with Glenn Powell and Zoe Deutsch. I feel like that has kind of like. Been the first movie that was a hit, a real massive hit for them.
Yeah.
Bright, you know, critics hated it. Some audiences liked it, but that one got some buzz.
Yeah.
But it got plenty of hate. And then everything that happened with Max Landis afterwards.
Well, people in the chat are saying Andy Serkis worked on Mowgli for 6 years, so upsetting. People saying it's embarrassing. Do you know what? I actually don't think it is. I think what we're seeing now is a movement within some of the major studios where they are going, actually, because we're seeing a lot of content that is, as you say, dumped on Netflix. Yes. We're seeing a lot of, but that's a lot from independent production companies who are selling their stuff to Netflix. And then we're seeing kind of, this is the first, I think, of a wave of studios who might potentially start looking at stuff, whereas they put it on VOD, studios putting money behind movies to then put on Netflix, potentially could raise some of the standard in that.
We have to think a little bit, we have to go a little bit deeper than this. Yeah, maybe. And here's the deal.
Yeah.
There was... You go ahead, you make a theatrical film, right? And you have all intentions of releasing a movie theatrically.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have got zero, and I mean zero buzz, you came out of CinemaCon, you couldn't really excite exhibitors. You weren't exciting anybody else coming out. They had the trailer out. There was virtually no buzz. It was DOA. Mm. The people who have to market this and the people who have to distribute. Like, there's a whole department dedicated to getting this movie out to a theater near you. If you can't come up, it's like, oh, my God, what are we going to – how can we change our marketing?
Yeah.
And there just comes a point where they say, wait, Netflix is offering us how much? Like, and if they were offered a ton of money that's going to cover part of their production cost – and they're either going to – they're probably going to make more than if they took more time and effort to market. Because those costs are very expensive.
True.
And then the distribution department has to fight to get that movie into theaters – and if nobody's going to go, and if the marketing is already proving.
Yeah.
So it's a good way to go.
Anthony, can we get 10 minutes? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic, cool. We're going to move on very quickly, but John Harrison saying in the chat, the movie reminds me of The Legend of Tarzan from 2016. Exactly. It even had the same visual aesthetic. Warner Brothers just has a tough time with big budget movies lately. I think that's a fair comment. Okay, let's run through a couple of stories and then we're going to get to box office. Just very quickly, Disney doesn't want to make, this is coming from John Turtletaub this week, Disney doesn't want to make National Treasure 3, but a reboot for Disney's streaming service is likely. I said that National Treasure was going to be something that was going to turn up on the Disney streaming service potentially as a TV show. Said this months ago.
We talked about it on the show because we talked about Nick Cage. Personally, why not make a movie?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, make one more movie.
Yeah.
Why not? There really are people who are clamoring for it.
Yeah,
And I get
do it for the streaming service though. Let's have one of these. I think we're going to see an increasing, and I think especially since with the Fox merger, I think we're going to start seeing some of these franchises coming back and being made into movies, relaunched as movies, but not taking the risk on the box office, putting them on the Disney streaming service to give people a reason to fork out for that.
If you're going to factor in his philosophy regarding budgets,
yeah,
you could have done a good National Treasure movie.
Yeah.
Without an inflated budget.
10, 25 million, you could very easily do that.
Even 35 to 40. Don't overinflate the budget. You could have given us a good National Treasure theatrical experience, mm-hmm, that people will have fun, because let's face it, we don't have Indiana Jones in the marketplace. We're not going to have him for another 50 years, apparently. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. It could fill in a really cool, fun void.
Absolutely.
And bring Nicolas Cage back.
Remake and prequel news. The Sandlot prequel in the works at Fox for no good reason. I didn't realize. I only saw The Sandlot quite recently. I know it's a kind of an iconic American movie. I only saw it quite recently. I didn't realize they made two sequels to that movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which no one talks about.
That actually worked.
Like a funny uncle. Yeah. No one invites him to Thanksgiving.
Nope.
Don't sit on Uncle Steve's lap.
Yeah.
Weird. Sony is remaking the 1987 Bruce Willis Kim Basinger movie, Blind Date.
Sure.
Why not? I love that movie.
Me too.
I love that movie.
Again, for me, it goes back
Bruce Willis had hair. So yes, did I in those days.
Number one, nobody was doing slapstick the way Blake Edwards.
No, it was great.
I mean, we had the Zucker Brothers for a little bit, right? So, but then there was Blake Edwards, and the genius of Blake Edwards that doesn't relate to today's audiences, mm-hmm, is he could set up a joke, but that joke is like 10 minutes long because it's a whole choreographed, mm-hmm, bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And John Larroquette in Blind Date is fantastic.
Yeah.
I really am a big fan of Blind Date. Put it out on Blu-ray already. If you're going to remake it, I don't know how you're going to do it.
Let's remake something that's not even on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Think about that, studios. Mm. Think about that.
Oh, no, because I wouldn't want them to remake Ruthless People either.
Yeah.
Because it's another great movie
that
and
is
it's
great.
Not on Blu-ray.
I want them to remake Hello Again with Shelley Long.
Oh, I remember that movie.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. Anyway, in Things That Hollywood Aren't Doing News... but let's talk about Indecent Proposal. There's a remake of that in the works. That's where basically, how much can I pay you to fuck your wife?
How much can I pay you to see this movie? It should be. That's
I don't think we need Indecent Proposal movie.
No.
There are several sort of sexual thrillers and sexual dramas from the 90s that I would love to see a remake of.
That were greatly cast.
Yeah, like, superb, but that's not one of them.
No.
But there you go. Consenting Adults was a great one. Kevin Kline, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Oh!
Awkward. I would love to see that remade.
Consenting Adults.
Let's very quickly... God, this has got very dark all of a sudden. Trailers this week. Venom was the big one that came out.
If you want to say that was a big one.
Ooh.
I think a big pile of you-know-what.
Yeah.
F that movie. That's how I feel about that movie.
I'm a little bit concerned about that.
I don't know if I'm not as...
The more I see of it, the less on board with it I am.
The more on board. It's like, why?
Why?
Yeah.
It just looks terrible. And why can't you ever understand Tom Hardy?
You know when you were able to understand him?
When?
In Star Trek Nemesis, when he wasn't on the roids, when he wasn't all beefed up, he was very thin, and he actually looked like a younger Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
And he was great in Inception.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. You know, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Look, he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
I understand.
Like in Mad Max, where he doesn't have to talk.
Yeah, well, I think he's a fantastic actor, and I think that, you know, his agent was like, hey, superhero movies. This is an anti-superhero, and you get to do that. So I get why he took the gig, and on paper, it must have looked really, really good. But, you know, I saw the first trailer, and I was like, meh. And then I saw this trailer, and
this trailer, they showed this at Comic-Con, and I legit was like,
that was to get people out of Hall H.
What the fuck to clear was the room. That?
Yeah, it's not good.
But it got applause, though. Right?
Of course it did. It's like you could show much someone does shitting Comic-Con. In a box in Comic-Con, and people are like, yeah! More.
That is true.
Run it again.
Okay, we're running out of time. Let's talk about the big releases this week. Let's talk about box office. The big three movies coming out this week are Christopher Robin, The Spy Who Dumped Me, and The Darkest Minds. Christopher Robin did 1.5 million in previews last night on Thursday, looking at doing a weekend about 30 million. So it's going to be between that and Mission Impossible Fallout Ball Out. They're going to be number one movie this week. Spy Who Dumped Me, zero buzz. Zero buzz. Did 950,000 in previews, looking at a weekend of about 13 million. Darkest Minds.
Ooh.
550,000 in previews, so half a mil just over. That's looking at a weekend of about 5 to 8 million.
Could that movie just right now just pop the bubble and the whole YA?
I had a conversation with Sean Levy.
I said about that. That's what I said after I saw it.
Like, just let's stick a fork in it.
I had a conversation with Sean about this a couple of months ago. Sean Levy, who produced the movie, and he's producing a number of YA things. And I was like, dude, why are you doing it? Everybody else is moving away from YA.
Overseas,
people just don't want to do it. I don't even think overseas there's that much of an interest in this stuff. This is a bust. It could be one of the lowest grossing studio movies of the year. It's a very dangerous thing to do. I haven't seen it, but let's get through to Christopher Robin first of all. A lot of reviews came out last night. Weirdly, it was embargoed until 7 o'clock last night Pacific time, which was strange as it was already showing in movie theaters, and it was actually showing in non-domestic territories the day before, which is kind of weird. I really like this movie. I was very surprised by it. It made me laugh. It made me cry. I had a way like this more than I thought I was going to like it. It's one of my favorite movies of the year, actually. It's certainly in my top five. A lot of people not loving it. I know you...
No. I'm very surprised to hear that, Mr. Simon.
Why? Because you think I'm a heartless shit?
It's Thompson.
No.
Don't go by Simon.
Yeah. No. But no, so,
just
so
Mr.
Why,
Thompson,
why,
yeah.
why are you surprised?
Respectful.
I thought it was very uneven. I thought that when it came to the human element of this story, I felt like it really lacked. I didn't buy into the relationship between his wife and daughter in the movie. I feel like there's not enough character development there between them.
Mm.
I feel like whenever Winnie the Pooh and the rest of the gang came on screen, the movie went from like a 5 to a 9. And they ultimately really saved the film. The tone of the movie is kind of weird. It feels like gothic and gloomy. Pretty much consistently throughout.
I thought it was a brave and a bold choice for a Disney movie.
It didn't fit in with Pooh as a character.
Yeah.
I did love the fact that the characters looked worn. I liked that they didn't look fresh and vivid.
Yeah.
That was great to me. But and every time they were on screen, I loved it. But I just... There was an emotional core missing of the film. And it was just... So goody two shoes at times. Like it just was like, oh, and the message was just so basic.
Which I actually really liked because it was very much. It was like it was simple. It's a simple movie, and for me, you say that it kind of lacked, you know, that heart, that center. For me, it had way more heart, and I think that simplicity for me was the fact that it was so pure, so unadulterated. Emotion for me from the characters that I actually I was not expecting much from this, and the fact that Disney have not been really trumpeting this movie at all, I was very surprised. I was kind of thinking that it wasn't going to be something that worked for me. It worked for me in ways that I really was not expecting, and for me the simplicity was a really big selling point. They didn't try to make it more than it was.
I did enjoy the movie overall. Yeah. I'm actually the opposite of you, though.
Interesting.
Going into this, I actually was really excited for it until they started screening it so late. Then I was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So for you, it was a loose poo.
Yeah.
Well, it was the most satisfying poo that I've had in a long time.
Eat more at Taco Bell.
That's true. That is true. And we cycle back. But no, I really enjoyed it. I like Ewan McGregor as Christopher Robin. Again, I get your points on the mother-daughter relationship, and I get that was kind of, for me, a MacGuffin in the movie.
Yeah.
So I was willing to kind of go, okay, actually, that was not... It was a MacGuffin. It wasn't a really central part of the movie. It was about Christopher Robin. It was about Pooh and Tigger and all his friends and his realization. So I didn't mind that kind of relationship being benched on the side. I really loved it.
It's the crutch of the movie. It ends.
It is
on
and
that.
It isn't. For me, the crutch of the movie was really the relationship with kind of Pooh. That was the thing, and the realization of Christopher Robin. It's Christopher Robin's story,
and they close with it, and it bookends.
What was that, Anthony? I don't know why I look in the sky. It's not like you're actually in the rafters. Anthony, come down! What are you doing?
He's got
Sorry, what were you saying?
Time to rap.
Oh, okay, cool.
Time to rap.
I don't rap.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's move on to Christopher Robin. The Spy Who Dumped Me, again, it's not going to be a massive success. Might make top five this week, but it's not going to be huge. And The Darkest Minds you saw, briefly, surmise that.
Yeah, just... It exists. There, it's a hodgepodge. It's a hodgepodge of ideas.
Yep.
The main girl in the movie, who I wish would get a really solid script. Hopefully, with The Hate U Give, it'll be her time to shine.
Yep.
Just wasted potential. Cool ideas, just doesn't go anywhere with it. Forced love story. Wasn't a fan. Spy Who Dumped Me. If you like Kate McKinnon, if you like her stick, you know, her thing that she does,
yeah,
you'll probably like the movie. If you don't like her and you don't like her thing, you're probably going to hate this movie.
Right.
That's the best way to
describe
that.
I'm going to watch that on a plane. Yeah. I recommend Christopher Robin. You do not.
No, I do. I do. Okay. Matinee.
I haven't seen it.
You should Sorry. Do it.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Take time out. Like, have a poo.
I will.
This weekend.
Like right after the show.
Okay, so.
Coffee. It's working its magic. Oh shit, we're still on.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. At which point we're actually going to wrap up the show. Dimitri, where can we find you and what are you doing on Anatomy of the Movie this week?
At DMovies, please support me on Twitter at DMovies1701. At DMovies1701. And come on over to Anatomy of a Movie. If you like to discuss and break down movies the way that we break down the industry here, we do this for movies. So this week, Mission Impossible Fallout, Teen Titans movie. Can't wait to talk about both of them. Really, really looking forward to really talking about Mission Impossible. Not enough big love for that movie this summer.
Absolutely. Scott, where can we find you?
Really quick, Instagram, Twitter, The Other Scott M. Do three shows here, obviously. This one, I do the LA Online Film Critics Society weekly show, which will be on at 11 o'clock today and every Friday at 11 a.m. And then finally, Black Tomatoes, which is on Sunday on Black Hollywood Live with Carla Renata at 5 p.m.
I wish I could be more metered as you. I should practice that.
It's fine. We'll get there.
Okay.
And my name is Simon Thompson. It's we'll work on it. It's fine. It's a work in progress. At Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. This has been the Movie Press. You can also find me on Facebook. This is Simon Thompson. Thank you so much for watching the show. Don't forget, like, subscribe. We welcome your comments on the YouTube channel afterwards. And please do post a review on iTunes and tell everybody that you know that loves movies about the show. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the time that you take to watch. Please spread the word. Thank you so much. We will see you next week. This has been Meet the Movie Press. It's August the 3rd, and we will see you soon. See use your movie pass while you can, people.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.